Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
That isn't the time for an airing of grievances.
Pro Football Talk.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
He is the creator and editor-in-chief of Pro Football Talk. He follows a story like no other, and he joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. It is Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. Mike, thanks for joining Rahimi and Harris on The Score. How are you?
Great to be with you. As always, got to get framed up here just right in your shot. There we go. Ready to go.
The Mike Florio palatial estate. We've got the wine cooler in the background, the glasses hanging from the wall. And it's a nice Mediterranean color motif. If you want to see it, you can join us on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Mike, I think we have to start with the latest in the collusion case that has now really picked up steam. When it comes to all the tentacles that you have followed now, along with Pablo Torre, for weeks, I think we're up to months at this point. What do you think about the latest developments of the NFL having to acknowledge this in a way that they didn't have to before?
Well, the reality is that, and it's still confusing and inexplicable, that the NFL Players Association would secure a partial victory in an important collusion case, one of the most important collusion rulings in pro sports history, that the NFL Management Council, with the blessing of the commissioner, urged teams to collude when it comes to fully guaranteed contracts. The NFLPA scored that partial victory, had plenty of evidence developed, circumstantial evidence, but still strong evidence to show that there was actual collusion, even though the arbitrator disagreed, and they would agree to the NFL, with the NFL, to hide that. Why would you agree to hide that? Hide that indefinitely. And now it's going to be appealed, primarily because it's been exposed. I don't know how the appeal is going to go. I don't know if it just goes away quickly and quietly in exchange for the NFL giving up its ability to pursue more than $12 million in legal fees that were spent in connection with a grievance that the NFL won. So it is just disappointing because, you know, for years, the league has been using against the players the fact that the players don't care. And now I feel like non-player leadership of the union is using against the players and has been using against the players the fact that they don't care. And it dates back to the hiring of Lloyd Howell, which was done very secretly, and no one knew what was going on. No one even knew who the candidates were, and the players did not care.
Mike, looking at where that is now, do you expect any reasonable change between now and the, I guess, if I'm looking at a window, the end of this calendar year?
Well, Chris Long, who was the Walter Payton Man of the Year 2017 season, played a long time in the NFL, has a podcast now. He suggested that what the non-player leadership is trying to do with the union for now is get to the start of training camp, because by then everyone will be distracted. They will have forgotten about it. I'll say this, though. The statement that was put out on Sunday by the union, circling the wagons around Executive Director Lloyd Howell, which was extensively covered by plenty of media members who had otherwise had their head in the sand on this entire story, but all of a sudden they get handed a self-serving statement from the union and they blast it out on their Twitter pages. Don't get me started on that. But in that statement, there's an acknowledgement they have a process in place, and there's been a law firm hired to look into the activities of Lloyd Howell. There are multiple different tentacles to that now, whether it's the investigation over his connection to a company known as One Team Partners, that's been documented. Hiding the collusion ruling and not using it in the best interest of the players, that's been documented. And the thing that is the most ridiculous to me, and I have a hard time even saying this with a straight face, the idea that the man who is ultimately in charge of one of the most important sports unions in the country has a part-time gig with a private equity firm that is in bed with the NFL. I can't believe that. I can't believe that's been allowed to exist. I can't believe that from the moment that ESPN reported on that wrinkle last week, Lloyd Howell wasn't told, you have to choose right now one or the other. You have to choose right now. And if you choose NFLPA and quit the Carlisle Group, you're still not out of the woods because we're still concerned about some of this other stuff. But that conflict of interest is as blatant and as stunning as it could be. The man whose sole job in life should be to advocate for the members of the NFL Players Association is getting paid by a company that's been approved by the NFL to purchase minority interests in teams. It is a joke. And that, more than anything else, proves that the players don't care. The fact that there isn't an uproar and a revolt to get rid of him based on that fact alone tells me the players don't care and non-player leadership is taking advantage of that.
Well, and to put it into context, Mike, I think it's important to talk about the money that he's receiving from this. You know, when we're thinking of side hustles, this isn't the salary equivalent of an Uber driver here. This is a reported, what, $2.5 million per year? Did I read
3.
That somewhere?
3.4.
My bad. I shorted him. Oh, yeah, I shorted him $900,000.
And
that's the part of this that I don't understand, too, is that not only is that money significant, think about rookie salaries per year. Think about how much money that they are leaving on the table, these individual NFL players, potentially, because he's getting his, and that's the part-time job.
What would we say if the commissioner of the NFL had a part-time job doing anything? What would we say? What would he say if his part-time job consisted of serving as a paid consultant for a company that has a business relationship with the NFLPA? What would we say? And I know the world has changed. We now live in post-truth, post-standards America, and things that used to matter don't matter anymore. And basically the message is, get what you can while you can. And if you ever get challenged on it, attack, deny, and declare victory. I get that. But, you know, I was raised in a quaint time where things like this mattered. And conflicts of interest mattered. And people were willing to say, you can't do that. There isn't enough of a willingness for people to say, you can't do that. And maybe that's because we've just surrendered, or maybe it's because we've changed the standard. If we've changed the standard, that's the worst possible outcome, because we need to care about conflicts of interest because people get taken advantage of. And if you have constituents that don't care, that makes it even easier to exploit potential conflicts of interest.
He is Mike Florio, the creator and editor-in-chief of Pro Football Talk. He joins us every week here on Rahimi and Harris, and we delve into the most serious of issues. Also try to rub a little fun in it, but things aren't fun right now as training camps are starting to rack up, if you will. Mike, there's a lot of second-round picks out here that are not signed. What should we make of that situation, and how serious could it become? The Bears here in Chicago have 3 second-round picks who haven't been signed.
Well, you know, it's funny. All this talk about collusion. The Texans definitely did not collude. They broke the mold here. They became the first team to give a second-round pick a fully guaranteed contract. Jaden Higgins, receiver they took with the second selection in round 2, he gets 100% guaranteed. Well, that boxed in the Browns. They had the first pick in round 2, linebacker Carson Schwechinger. He got 100% fully guaranteed. So he got 30 guys taken after them in round 2. And some are saying that all of them want fully guaranteed contracts. But when you look at the percentage of the contracts for last year's round 2 players, how much of it was guaranteed, like by the time you get to the bottom of round, it's like 52-53%. The problem is the guys late in the round don't know what percent they should shoot for, because they don't know how deep this 100% is going to go. And, you know, the guys who got a certain percentage fully guaranteed last year, they're going to get more this year, but how much more? So I think what's got to happen, there's got to be one guy that gets less than 100. And some think it's going to be Quinshon Judkins, the Ohio State running back, who's the 4th pick in round 2 by the Browns. He got arrested over the weekend for misdemeanor domestic battery. The thinking is, on the heels of that incident, he'll take less than 100% fully guaranteed, and that will cause all the others to fall in line. But that's the gist of it. That's what happened. The Texans gave a guy a fully guaranteed contract, and it has caused everyone else to just kind of say, oh, crap, what do we do next? And I think they're waiting for that first player at the top of round 2 to not get 100% fully guaranteed, and then everything will fall in place from there.
Well, we're...
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, seriously researched, hard-hitting history podcast told through entertaining stories. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Starting to see a lot of interesting stories pop up on Pro Football Talk because of it. Like, for example, the headline, Shamar Stewart could still try to go back to school. You know, talking about workouts and being involved in Texas A&M, which is where he played his college ball. You know, how, what are the real options here if some of these guys don't end up signing?
And Stewart's in a different situation. He's a first rounder who hasn't signed because the Bengals are trying to change unilaterally the language. And this gets so esoteric, but it's language that relates to how your contract guarantees get voided. And their current default language is if you do something you shouldn't do, your guarantee for this year is gone. They want Stewart to accept a term that would say all of your future guarantees are gone. They've never done that before. They want Stewart to be the first one, and they don't want to give him anything by way of a concession to balance that out. That's how negotiation works. You balance things out. So they're staring at each other, and the Bengals' attitude is just sign the thing. We're not blinking. So Stewart could, in theory, he's got two viable options. One, sit out the entire season, don't play football anywhere, re-enter the draft next year. Anyone but the Bengals can take you. He can do that. The other option is that's viable. There are others, but this one's viable. Go back to college, play one more year, make as much as you can in NIL money. If you can force your way back onto the field, you don't have to take on the NCAA because they're going to say, sorry, you entered the draft, you hired an agent. And the argument would be, hey, that rule is the same kind of antitrust violation that everything else is that's been exposed. So you better back off or we're going to sue you. So there's a path. You may have to go through court, but there's a path to go back to school for Stewart. He would go back, he would play, he would get paid, and then the Bengals would still hold his rights as the 17th pick in the draft next year. So there's a number at which I think Stewart says, I'll do it. I don't know how big it would have to be, but I think there's a number where he'd say, if you're going to pay me that much to play college football, I'll try it. And, you know, the fallback always is I'll do my deal with the Bengals and I'll show up for training camp in the regular season.
Yeah, I think there's a couple tentacles to this. I think, number one, Texas A&M fans, knowing them and their boosters, I think that they would try to make it happen monetarily because any chance that they get to be better, they might be interested. Number two, he puts the Bengals in a really difficult situation because of what's going on with Trey Hendrickson. And then number three, when you mentioned the contract setup, does it relate at all to what Caleb Williams and his group was trying to contest before he ended up signing his contract? Are the two related at all?
Yes and no. I mean, at the end of the day, look, Caleb Williams and his dad, I believe, were trying to be extremely creative about the various things they were suggesting and pursuing. And I respect the Williamses for the ideas they brought to the table and the things they tried to do. But at the end of the day, this isn't about money. This is about power, I think. And I think it's about the teams reminding the players, we own this. We run this. You just work here. And at some point, you will be gone and there will be another player who takes your place, but we will still be here. We make the terms. You just sign the contract and you go to work. And I think that's the attitude the Bengals have had towards Stewart. And I think in refusing to play along with the suggestions that were made last year by Caleb Williams to the Bears, that's part of it. And it all ties back to collusion, too, because even though they'd never admit this, look, no team wants to be the one that sends in a proposed contract to the NFL Management Council that has some revolutionary new term that could spread throughout the league that could weaken the collective power of the teams. It all goes back to fully guaranteed contracts or anything else. So there's always this concern they're going to get in trouble with the management council. Even though they're supposed to be competing, 32 independent businesses, they answer to the management council. And I would suspect that the reason the Bears said no, 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 no to everything Caleb Williams wanted, they were concerned they send in some crazy new contract term to the management council. They're going to get a phone call. What the hell are you doing?
Mike Florio joining us here on Raheemy and Harris, the creator and editor-in-chief of Pro Football Talk. I wanted to ask you about something that was written about and something we paid attention to, obviously, working in the media industry. FS1 changing a lot of their programming this week, and a lot of that is football-based. I'm wondering if we're talking about a different ecosystem as far as what we look at when it comes to sports media, the fact that football kind of drives some of this programming, if that's going to change what we see on these cable networks now, with so many people shifting to the YouTube model, the podcast model. It seems like there's going to be a break from establishment media because more and more people are getting their entertainment, sports, news, all of that stuff from that side of it as opposed to the establishment.
I don't disagree with that. I think it's a complicated question. I think a lot of it has to do potentially with the people who were on the air. You know, for former players, and I've told multiple players this over the year, the first thing you've got to do is stop approaching the game like a player and start approaching the game like a fan. Don't act like it's beneath you to be a fan. And for the guys who can't be bothered to act like fans, they don't last long in the media because they don't know as much as they should. They aren't engaged as much as they should. They just think they're entitled to go get a check and be on TV because they think they do a good job, but they don't have the substance to back it up. So I think that may be part of it. I'm not going to name names of the guys who were let go, but I think that may be part of it. Secondly, I agree. And I think Fox, look, and they always tell us, don't talk about other networks. Don't talk about other networks, because I think the executives at NBC don't like getting, you know, phone calls from their contemporaries with the other networks saying, why is your guy saying this? But I will say this. If you're going to program old-fashioned linear TV, it's got to be programmed with an eye toward where else will this live and how else can we monetize this as a podcast, as a YouTube show, clips that get pumped onto our digital platforms. You know, I know what we do every morning on Peacock. That goes to SiriusXM 85. It goes to podcasts. It goes to YouTube. The clips end up on the PFT website. With every story, there's a clip, and they monetize it 10 different ways. If you're only monetizing your content through linear TV, you will fail. And again, I don't want to give free advice to Fox. I think they know better than I do. But if you're only thinking about the linear TV audience, you are destined to fail. You've got to be thinking bigger than that.
Our segment with Mike is brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. And quickly, Mike, before our break hits here, I want to ask you about Jahmyr Gibbs, because we see this, and we're always paying attention to what the NFC North is doing. He says he's lining up at receiver more in this year's offense as we try to figure out what happens to the Lions offense post Ben Johnson. This is a detail.
I'm a firm believer in getting your 11 best players on the field at all times. And Jahmyr Gibbs is one of the most talented running backs in the NFL. And the problem is he doesn't get the ball in his hands enough to show it and to earn the kind of contract that being one of the best running backs in the NFL would entail. And I don't know how much of this is we have to placate him. There's a delicate balance there, because if you feature a guy and he becomes the workhorse, then you have to give him that giant contract. If he's not the workhorse and the numbers aren't there, then maybe you don't have to give him as big of a contract. But I think all of this is part of, and you know, this is a problem the Lions have never had. We got a bunch of great young players. How do we pay all of them? But Gibbs is going to be knocking on the door after this season for his second contract. And touches, reps, where you're playing, how you're playing, what you're doing, that's all going to be part of it. But as a football proposition, look, I think the best outcome is make him your workhorse and let David Montgomery be the backup. All due respect to David Montgomery, Jahmyr Gibbs is a better player. But if you're going to go with Montgomery from time to time, find a way to keep Gibbs on the field and have your 11 best guys on the field at all times. So it's just fascinating to see what they do post Ben Johnson. You take the best offensive mind in football and you lose him to the Bears. What does the replacement do? And maybe do they try too hard to out Ben Johnson, Ben Johnson?
Excellent point, Mike. That was Mike Florio. Thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Thank you. Have a great week.
Mike Florio, the editor and creator of Pro Football Talk.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, seriously researched, hard-hitting history podcast told through entertaining stories. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.